Welcome to Visionaries. I'm your host, Jacob Wolf, an award-winning investigative journalist and the CEO and founder of Overcome. No guest this week for us. It is just Prem and I, but it has been an incredibly busy week in the gaming space and the live streaming space, and we wanted to break it all down. Here's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about Summer Games Fest, which if you missed, happened over the last week, starting last Thursday through this Monday. The two big items there were the initial Summer Games Fest presentation, where Jeff Keighley did a presentation of a bunch of different games from a bunch of different developers. We got to see Mortal Kombat 1. We got to see Spider-Man 2. And then on Sunday, there was kind of the other big marquee part of Summer Games Fest, which was the Xbox showcase, Microsoft demoing a bunch of different games in front of a live audience. And then right after it, the Starfield Direct, which was also ran by Microsoft, for their new upcoming game this fall, which is Starfield, a huge open world space exploration game that has a lot of hype riding on it, which we'll get to in a little bit. We're going to also dive into a couple of other things that are going on in the gaming space, including what happened this week with Nick Merckx and Activision Blizzard around his comments around the LGBTQ community and the removal of his operator, that's the right word, from Call of Duty. And some of the reaction to that, including Tim the Tapman, another influencer, asking Activision to remove his operator from Call of Duty, of which they obliged. And then lastly, we want to talk a little bit about the reaction to Fable, one of the games that happened at the Microsoft showcase, which feels a little tangential to the Nick Merckx things because it's a lot of sexism and transphobia as well. And I think we want to have a bigger discussion here about what's going on with gaming and gaming getting sort of more mainstream attention, but not necessarily the mainstream attention that's great, and a much bigger conversation around all of that. With me, as always, is Prem. Prem, how are you doing?
Pretty good. A lot of games to talk about, dude. I mean, you mentioned the opening Summer Games Fest showcase on Thursday and the Microsoft one on Sunday, but you're forgetting about the Tribeca game spotlight, where like all the artsy, and it maybe sounds a little condescending, but like this is my cup of tea. I love super aesthetic, like kind of niche storytelling art style games. So we'll definitely hit on that a little bit.
Yeah, and the OTK showcase that was on Saturday. OTK, the influencer group, Asmongold, and a bunch of others have announced that they're launching a publisher for indie game titles. They said that they've gotten a ton of applications already over the past week since they announced that on Saturday. You know, Zach Diaz from OTK was on the show last week. I'm sure we'll have some people on at some point to talk about that when they're a little bit further along and have more than just ideas. But yeah, it was a very busy, not E3 week, as a lot of people have coined it. For those maybe unfamiliar, E3 was the massive gaming showcase that has taken place over the past 15 years, ran by the ESRB, which is the ratings board that gives sort of, you know, E for everyone or M for mature or T for teen ratings for every single game. They would organize this big showcase called E3, the Electronic Entertainment Expo. E3 has kind of gone up in smoke, and while it still sort of exists, it's not really super relevant anymore. And another person who has ran the Game Awards for the past couple of or few years, Jeff Keighley, has taken over with Summer Games Fest. Jeff has some beef with E3 that is on social media. That's always funny. So I'm sure he probably felt pretty good about how things went down, but it's definitely not E3. It's kind of E3, it's E3 with less interactivity because, like, yes, yeah, there was an audience this year for the Summer Games Fest Expo on Thursday, but it was just an audience in a theater. It wasn't like E3, as someone who's been to them, where it's like everybody on the show floor, people are lined up in queues sort of to play Nintendo and Borderlands and everything else that happened at kind of the last major E3 in 2019. You know, they were demoing a bunch of games and it was like public access. This is very much just like come sit at a theater and watch these, you know, interviews with devs and also these like game trailer premieres, which is fine. It was still cool. It was still cool to see a bunch of new titles. I think we're excited for like the fall gaming calendar over the next like 6 months, but it's not the E3 experience necessarily.
Yes, but Jeff did announce today that the Play Day is coming back next year. So all of those games will have demos, and there'll be a convention floor where all of that will be available in 2024, which is, as someone who I grew up with E3, I remember always being so excited for that as a kid.
Yep.
I'm so glad I got to go to E3 in 2019 and like experience it at least once. But it definitely hurts, man. It stings to lose this thing that was like very much this foundation of gaming culture for 20 plus years of my life.
Well, I think too, it's because, like, you know, a lot of these publishers want control and they want to be able to like really showcase things as they want to. You know, in that E3 2019, there was a distinct sort of like Xbox section that was very significant where Microsoft was demoing a bunch of stuff. Nintendo had like this double decker sort of setup where like the bottom floor was basically like general access. You know, you could go in and play Luigi's Mansion 2 and a bunch of the other games that they were demoing that year. Luigi's Mansion 3, sorry, you're correct. Luigi's Mansion 3, which, did I finish that game? I can't even remember.
I didn't.
Played so many different things. I played a lot of it, though. I do remember it. It was a good game. They were demoing a bunch of those different games, and then the top floor was like the PR, press, meet and greet, you know, demo stuff.
It was the treehouse.
It's the treehouse. Yes, it was. It was treehouse type. Big red treehouse. But yeah, so that... It was not the same, the last E3 that sort of was the big one pre-COVID. And I wouldn't say COVID is the only reason, though. It contributed to it, right? Because, you know, 2020 got canceled because of the pandemic, and then all the subsequent ones have just struggled because Sony and Microsoft in particular have not wanted to participate in E3. They have done their own showcases separately. Sony did one at the end of May, which we talked about a little bit here on the show, just like kind of glossed over what was going on. And then Sony participated in this one a little bit as well on Thursday. And then Xbox had their big showcase on Sunday. So, yeah.
Yeah. Man, it's a weird culture. This idea that the publishers have to have total control of the way in which their new games are consumed prior to release. Like I think gaming is worse off because of it.
I agree.
Like I think that the best thing about E3 was that journalists and media people could go and play games and could critique the issues that they had with those games, and we just don't have
the public could too. You know, like you could buy just a normal pass and get those opportunities. Yeah. You know, the media still had some opportunity to play some of the games here as well. We heard a lot about like people having their hands on Starfield for the first time, but it's not the same without the public. So it is really, I'm very conflicted. I don't think the ESRB are a great group of folks. Like I think they have had a really outsized role in the gaming space where they were very dominant. And I think that they squeezed a lot of devs a lot of times, but I think we've overcorrected to the point where the devs and publishers have all the control. And I don't think that's the right answer either. The answer's somewhere in the middle, but unfortunately with gaming becoming such a bigger part of especially Microsoft and Sony's bigger portfolio, right? It's a huge focus of what they do because, and I'm not mentioning Nintendo here because Nintendo is a gaming company top to bottom. I'm talking about the ones that have other entertainment, film, and, you know, film, cameras, all sorts of stuff on the case of Sony, other entertainment, you know, verticals and technology verticals not related to video games. And in the case of Microsoft, Windows and AI and everything else that they have, you know, these massive. Microsoft's the top 10 biggest company in the world by market cap, but gaming is becoming a bigger focus for the both of those companies as they move forward and they think about their future. And I think that they are thinking more about how they control the narrative around what they do in gaming, and that is why we are at this point. So I don't want to labor on that too much, but to give a little bit of clarity is why we're saying this is not E3. That said, though, we are still gamers at heart. We are still excited about what's happening.
Get into
here.
The games.
Yes, Prame. We'll do this style where we talk about let's choose three of our favorite games from, or most exciting games from these. from these presentations. Prem, we'll go backwards snake style. So actually, you go first. I go. I get two. You get two, and then I'll end out. So what is your favorite game or top three? You don't have to stack rank them. What is one of your favorite games from Summer Games Fest presentation?
I am so excited about this new Atlas game, Metaphor Raphazio. So for context, I have played Persona 4 and 5, and I've probably put upwards of like 800 hours in both of them, or cumulatively. And I, like, everything about this new game looks awesome. It looks like it has the incredible storytelling that is so prevalent in Persona games, and it has a little bit more complexity in the combat. It's a little closer to Shin Megami Tensei. But my God, the staff on that game is incredible. It's the director from Persona 3, 4, and 5, the person who did all of the audio work on 5. Everything about that looks like it's going to be right up my alley. So that one's probably my sleeper pick almost. But that one's going to be good.
So this is going to be my number one pick. It's not even debated. And we'll dive into the cultural discussion around it later. Fable. I am so excited. This was announced. It was basically teased. And I would say for the Xbox showcase, it was like the headlining game. Because if you looked at the promotional material around the Xbox showcase beforehand, Fable was sort of all over it, you know, like their wandering trail of glitter and stuff. And all of that was all over all their promotional material. So you knew what you were getting coming into this. I knew there was going to be a Fable game just from like no embargoes, nothing, just because it was so abundantly clear. Fable is one of my favorite series, and I think it's one that gamers don't quite have as younger gamers don't have as much affinity towards because it's not. I think the last Fable game, if memory serves correctly, that's not a remaster because remasters don't count, was an Xbox Kinect game for Xbox 360. I'm almost certain that is the last Fable game. There was never a Fable 4. There was Fable 1, 2, and 3.
I don't think it was Kinect. I think it was just a 360 game.
Oh, I'm almost certain it was a Kinect game because I remember I bought it and my like absolute expectations were just awful. Like they were not met at all. It was a Fable Fortune digital collectible game. I don't count that, but there was, yes, I was correct. The last Fable game, full Fable game that was action role playing was Fable the Journey in 2012, and it was a Kinect game. It was a motion capture.
I forgot about the Journey. Okay, I was just thinking about Fable 3, which was just a 360 game.
Correct, 2010. And Fable 2, which was also 360, and then Fable, the original Fable, they've remastered since, but I'm not counting that because it was the base game with some, you know, it's a good game to play again. But I will tell you, I have a really good memory, a photographic memory, and I will tell you that there are very few times in my life that I very visually remember games. And I remember buying Fable 2. I remember that we had gone to like a Kmart in my hometown. And we had gone to this Kmart and it was right before Easter. And like my mom was putting together the Easter baskets for everyone. And I was told I could pick a game that was on sale. And I picked Fable 2 because I thought it would be really cool. Never have I had so much fun with an RPG. That game is extremely, extremely, extremely close to my heart. Fable 3 was not as good. Fable 2 was amazing. And the studio that created the Fable games has had a lot of issues over time that then reorged within Microsoft. And I am so excited for this new title. And we've seen very little of it. Not a lot of it was gameplay. A lot of it was like narrative from the actual trailer. But it just gets me really, really excited because I think like this is the game that to me in the single player role playing genre really like changed my life. Like it was 2007, 2008. And it was really, really like defining for me and that genre. And I love that. I love RPG games. I'm super into it. So I'm excited for Fable whenever it comes out.
Fable is one that, as someone who didn't have an Xbox growing up, that's one of the games that I, that and Knights of the Old Republic are two of the games that I just, I hate that I didn't get to play those as a kid, and I don't get to experience that sense of like pure mysticism and just being blown away by the scope and scale of it. Like, now I've gone back and played both, and they're both incredible, obviously. But
yeah,
there's something very different about experiencing that as a child, and the
100%
feeling of childlike kind of wonder of being in it is so, it's kind of, it's just beautiful. It's a really, really fantastic thing.
Yes, I agree. I'm going to do my next one because, again, we're doing this snake style. And this one might be a little controversial. It's not a full game, but I think, like, I've been thinking about this game more and more, and I think it's time I step into it because I tried and then I returned it. And that is Cyberpunk 2077 yes! Phantom Liberty. This is a huge expansion for Cyberpunk. If you are not familiar, Cyberpunk came out in 2020, yep. And it was really bad. I had bought it on PlayStation 4 and returned it within the week, and because it was so glitchy.
Yeah.
And I was so disappointed because the publisher for this game, CD Projekt Red, is fantastic. Like, The Witcher 3 is an amazing gaming experience.
Hold on, Witcher 3 was borderline unplayable when it released.
Correct.
And so this was very much par for the course. To have a game that, like, doesn't work the day it releases. But I have played it recently. That game has gotten so much better. Most of the bugs have been fixed. I love Cyberpunk 2077.
There's another game that is exactly like that for me that I, like, tried on release, really hated. Now I play it, like, semi-regularly, and that's No Man's Sky. No Man's Sky is a fun game now.
I love No Man's Sky.
But it's been years, and, like, they completely botched it. You know, it had the hype. You know, Todd Howard can say whatever he wanted to say. He says No Man's Sky and Starfield are not comparable, but, like, No Man's Sky had the same kind of hype, like a space exploration, multiplayer capacity here. Like, No Man's Sky is really fun now. Like, there's a group of guys that, like, I met through somebody else, and they play that and Sea of Thieves a lot, and I'll, like, very frequently, like, hop in there and play this with them. And some of them probably listen to this podcast, so hello, folks. But nonetheless, like, yeah, like, I really like NMS now, and I hope that Cyberpunk gets the same opportunity, and I hope that Phantom Liberty is the fix.
Maybe a hot take on No Man's Sky. I have enjoyed that game since day one. I haven't played it a lot recently, but, like, when it came out in 2016, I think, it was a really nice little, like, solo exploration game. It definitely didn't deliver on the things it said it would, but it was still a beautiful thing. I am a huge fan of 65 Days of Static, who did all of the soundtrack work for it. And so just flying around, listening to their kind of ambient metal, almost techno soundtrack was awesome to me. That game scratched a very specific itch that I didn't know I had at the time. And to this day, it still really feels like one of my favorite kind of be alone in space, exploring, just adventuring with no goals, no quests, just do. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I have really wanted to play it in VR. It is really buggy. I've tried it on the Quest 2. It's not great. I think it's time to buy, like, I don't have the space, unfortunately, anywhere in my house to, like, mount up, like, the full-on, like, wall mounts and everything for a Vive or
Index.
Yeah, or an Index, Valve Index. Otherwise, I would be playing No Man's Sky in VR because it is just the little I got to experience on the Quest 2. I do the actual plug-in, too. Just a little. It's really cool.
It's cool.
So, anyway, we were talking about Cyberpunk.
It barely works, but it's really cool.
I really want Cyberpunk to get its same time because I love the concept of the game. I love the source material that it comes from. And I really, really hope this is the fix. I am going to buy and try again the actual base game because I've heard it's gotten a lot better. And I'm sure they're going to make it ready for Phantom Liberty as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for this.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Prime, go ahead. What is your next one?
My second pick is going to be Senua's Saga Hellblade 2. So if you haven't played the first game, Senua's Sacrifice, the game is entirely focused on the individual quest of someone who is struggling with schizophrenia. And all of the kind of theme of it is based on research of a professor that I worked with very briefly at Stanford, Tanya Luhrmann. And the core of the research is that in individualistic nations, more your Western nations, US, UK, etc., schizophrenia expresses itself as really negative voices that are telling you that you're bad, you're awful, you know, you're the problem. Whereas in collectivistic societies, more Eastern societies, schizophrenia actually exhibits as like comforting and supportive voices from elders, from people in your community that you respect and love. And this game did that beautifully. It has some of the most immersive and really, really well fleshed out sound work. It's a game that you have to play with headphones to get the full stereo effect of it. And it feels like you have schizophrenia. And you have to experience the kind of mental and emotional and psychosocial overcoming a hardship, this larger internal quest of understanding what that means. And so knowing how well Ninja Theory did the first game, I have full expectation that the second one is going to be similarly incredible. It's already looks beautiful. From what little we saw, it sounds great. The studio is one that I trust. They've done a lot of work in psychology. They, if memory serves, they even have a full psychology research firm based out of London. And so, yeah, I'm very excited about the discourse around it, honestly. I'm excited for the conversations, like the really heartfelt conversations people can and should have about understanding and kind of working through mental illness as it's portrayed in a game. I think that's, I've been a proponent of having real meaningful discussions about mental health for years and years now, and I think this is one that should do the same. And my final pick, oh gosh, I have to pick one of these games. I think it's got to be Final Fantasy VII Remake 2 Rebirth, whatever. And part of the reason is because I'm curious. So the first remake was incredible. It's a very, very, like, true retelling of Final Fantasy VII. As someone who didn't play Final Fantasy VII, I've only heard great things about the remake in terms of how true it stays to the story while changing it from turn-based to action RPG. The reason I'm curious about part two of this three-part saga is that the first game is already enormous. It's a massive game, and it's on one disc. This next game, they say it's on two discs, but the way discs work now is that the discs are just an authorization code so you can download the file. But for it to be on two discs, that means the download file has to be so goddamn big that it required two discs. So this is going to be like a 300 gigabyte game. That's enormous. That's absurd. And knowing Square, I know they're going to do this, make this the biggest game they possibly can. And I'm stoked. I'm really excited about that. I'm not going to be able to play it because it's not like I can load all of that. I don't know if I even have that much space left. If I erase everything, that'll take up half of my hard drive.
Sounds like it's time to go hop on like a SanDisk or Samsung H era hard drive sale, Prime on Amazon or elsewhere.
It's yeah, you're right. I mean, you're right, but.
I recently put shout outs to our friends at Western Digital. I not a sponsor, just friends. I recently put a 2 terabyte SSD in my PlayStation because I started to get to the point where like I just can't install any more PS5 games. Like, and it's sad, like having to delete because some days I'm in a mood to play something different. I've been playing nothing but Tears of the Kingdom recently. But yes, this is the problem with games is the damn, like I've got an external on my desk too. The damn file sizes. Like, I'm glad we have games that are this immersive, but good lord, yeah, like some of them are huge. They're huge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I remember thinking as a kid some of the games I played were massive worlds. Childhood me could never have imagined how like big and deep games would become.
Yep. No, I remember that exact feeling with Mass Effect 2. I was like, oh man, like this is huge. And it's pales in comparison to some of what we're getting now, which is nuts. We'll get into that in a second. I'm going to share my last one. My last one, I have told you and Sammy multiple times that I am super excited about. I'm playing through the remaster of the first now, and that is Alan Wake 2.
Oh,
I am so excited. I am not a like horror game aficionado. I did play Amnesia and its sequels multiple times, but not because like I have some crazy affinity for the genre. Like some of the more recent Resident Evil games I have not played, the more horror centric ones. Not because it's just like not necessarily my cup of tea. But what I do like is I have like a real love for like detective-ish style games, and I probably not so coincidentally really love true crime podcasts too, and so I'm sure those two things go hand in hand. I am so excited for Alan Wake 2. I think like Alan Wake 1 was a fantastic game. I love the concept. I don't know, from what we saw, we actually saw real gameplay too. I remember we were talking during it and I was like, oh my god, like the lighting looks incredible. Like this game's gonna take real advantage of like, you know, 2022 2023 graphics cards and the 2020 console releases, the current gen of consoles, because you know they have the ability to do like all of this fancy lighting effect with ray tracing and elsewhere, and like it looked awesome. The like real Unreal, I don't think this is built on Unreal Engine, and I actually don't know. Actually, I want to look that up before I say that.
I was just
it up. It's published by Epic, or it's published on Epic Game Store, so it would make sense if it is, but let's see. It is not. I was correct. It's actually built on the Northlight engine, which is the original. It's an original engine made by Quantum Break, or used by Quantum Break, and then in Alan Wake 1 and Max Payne as well. So yes, I was correct. Remedy makes their own engine, but it looked awesome. Survival horror genre is about to get a really great game. If you are listening to this, you've not played Alan Wake 1, go pick it up. I think it's like, I don't know if it's still on sale. It's like $12 on the Days of Play sale. It's like for PlayStation. I think it's similarly priced for PC. Cheap. It's like, it's totally affordable, easy to get into. It's a game from the 2010s, and the remaster is really, really good and worth playing too. So yeah, that's my last one. Alan Wake 2.
Can I do an honorable mention?
Sure.
It's a dumb one. This one's real stupid. Goddamn Pal World. It's Pokemon with guns and slavery. What a stupid idea, but that sounds so fun to me. Like Pokemon. But also, I'm going to use my Pokemon for unpaid labor because of course I am. Why not? And I have guns. That sounds like the perfect, I'm going to turn off my brain. I'm not going to think. I'm going to actively lose brain cells while playing it, but I'm going to have a fun time doing it. It's kind of like just getting drunk. You shouldn't do it, but when you do, you just enjoy it.
Fair. Fair. I probably won't play that game for clarity, but yeah, nonetheless, we'll let you have your honorable mention. I do want to talk, though, Starfield. This is the big story coming out of Summer Games Fest. Yes. Starfield had basically an hour-long presentation on Sunday, and a lot of people got to play this game. If you're unfamiliar, this is, like I said, the open-world space exploration game by Bethesda. It is the same developer and publishing house behind the Elder Scrolls games, right? Which Skyrim is one of the probably the best games of all time, like a very tentpole game that has been republished and remastered a bajillion times because of how commercially successful it was. Also behind Fallout, right? Like the and while not this specific studio, but others in the publisher network, like Arkane, Austin has had a really bad time with Redfall recently. This game is going to be huge for Xbox this year. Yes. It's in a good way or a bad way, right? Because this is like Xbox's big bet, right? They're trying to get Activision Blizzard right now. Activision Blizzard has some really great IP. I'm sure if they acquire Activision Blizzard, if all the various different regulatory bodies that are interfering right now eventually come to deals, I'm sure there will be good Call of Duties. I am sure there will be other good games coming out of Blizzard. I mean, Diablo 4 is doing really well right now. Microsoft will make this, you know, the IP sing even more. But the first big bet that Microsoft made for this generation, the Xbox Series generation and the PlayStation 5, obviously PC as well, is the acquisition of ZeniMax, which owns Bethesda, which are a huge publisher. And Redfall was a joke that has immense amount of bugs that they've apologized for.
Yeah,
this one is make or break. They had an entire, I'm saying this again, an entire hour long presentation on a single game. I really like Bethesda's games. There are a lot of good memories for me around Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 and Oblivion and Skyrim. There are, and Morrowind 2, which I've gone back and replayed since with mods. And I don't know if Starfield, even if it's great, can live up to the expectations that are being placed on it, because it's nuts. Yeah. And we've already heard a little bit of news that console gamers are upset about. Starfield will not run anything higher than 30 FPS on the consoles, which is fine, but yeah, I don't know. So, Crane, do you have thoughts after the presentation?
I think that the 30 FPS thing is overblown. I think that people are being a little bit overly dramatic about it. Like, I would much rather have a game whose frame rate is stable at all points than a game that occasionally hits 60 when there's just enough things on the screen to not be a problem. Like, I think that frustration is kind of unfounded, especially given the scope and the scale of this game. Hitting 60 is going to be hard, like, period. If you want to be hitting 60 on a game has you moving through space where there's constantly new objects coming into screen, going out of screen, and having to render and process, you're going to need to be playing on like the equivalent of a 480 or a 4080 computer with 64 gigs of RAM and like the i7 27 or 12770K. I think that's the highest level right now.
I'm going to benchmark it against my computer, which has a Tension i9 and a 3090, which just a lot of video and CPU power. We'll see how it does in a couple months.
Yeah. This game has, for starters, this game has been in development for like 7 years, I think. It started development after Fallout 4, if memory serves. And so they've had a lot of time to iron out those kinks, to understand how best to deliver that product. And I trust Bethesda in that respect. Like,
Fallout, I hope you're right.
Yeah, Fallout New Vegas on release notwithstanding, Fallout games have been really reliably stable.
Well, Fallout 76 was a shit show.
Okay, that one, that's a whole different bag of worms. I'm not. Fallout 76 is a joke. Like I know now it's better, but yeah, that was dog shit when it came out.
I think the problem is that, you know, there was a lot of, it wasn't like his game. Todd Howard is, you know, a legendary film or legendary game maker at this studio at Bethesda. And while Fallout 76 wasn't one of his like very hands-on projects, he did a lot of hype. I saw a clip recently from the Fallout 76 reveal where he was like very much, you know, hyping it up in front of this audience, saying like it was going to be defining and a bunch of other these like big terms. And Fallout 76 was a mess. And I think like I don't remember a game that so much of not just a development studio, but a publisher's sort of affinity. Like Microsoft's gotten a lot of good press the past few years, but I don't remember a time when one entire gaming company had so much writing on one title. It has been a while. And the only, like, not even things like The Last of Us or like were like this, you know, like it's The Last of Us original game. Like, you heard Troy here on the podcast, go back and listen to our episode with Troy Baker. Like, the expectations were through the floor and it outperformed, right? Like, it's almost better for the expectations to be really low and the game to do really well. But all the eyes are on Microsoft for this one, and it's gotta be damn near perfect. And they said in a recent interview, I believe this was one of the, might be misquoting, but I believe that this was one of the Giant Bomb interviews that Phil Spencer did this past week, and basically said that Starfield was ready for release now, but that the extra time is basically to make sure that it's extra polished, like that, yeah, it could go now, but this extra time is to polish it one last time. And so everything is riding on this.
I think going back, yeah, that this is the thing. So this game has been in development for a long time. The hype around it is huge. They have to make sure that it's good on release, because the scale of this and the amount of money that's going into not just the development, but the marketing, the promotion, and will go into all of the ad campaigns in the fall, it could legitimately break a company. I wouldn't be surprised if ZeniMax was putting a pretty substantial amount of Bethesda's capital on the line to make sure this game explodes.
Yeah, I agree. And after Redfall being such a like stinker, I think like there was some questions for Phil around that as well. And a lot of people weren't happy with his answer, because it's like, oh, we'll just kind of like see how it plays out. And it's just like, like they've already announced the next Elder Scrolls title. When the hell we'll get it, we don't know. I'm sure like Elder Scrolls 6 will be a long time from now. But like, yeah, I agree. A lot rides for ZeniMax on this title. And I don't think Microsoft, knowing that, would push a buggy game, like a really buggy game. Every game's going to be buggy on release, because there's not enough QA testers to play these things in the world, like experienced QA testers, to get every game bug right. And something is going to happen, especially when you start introducing, I would guess the PC version is more buggy than the Xbox version too. Because the thing is with PCs is you're playing with variable hardware, right? Not every motherboard, not every CPU, and not every graphics card are equal, right? And like, while you can demo test them on a bunch of various different builds, you may not get all of the bugs in your QA, like your quality assurance testing. Whereas on an Xbox Series X or Xbox Series S, you are going to be able to very much localize that to very specific things and bug test around that, because all of them are functionally the same with very minor difference. And so I bet you the PC version, which I expect to be very popular, because a lot of people are going to want to like very much show off this game and how pretty it is on a PC. I'm I'm one of those people, somebody that has a 1440p, really nice fidelity monitor and a really nice computer that was built mostly for video editing, but also to play video games on. And so, yeah, the PC version, I expect will have some issues, but I think it's about minimizing the amount of issues. That's the goal here for Bethesda.
Yeah. I have hopes that it'll work out. I'm saying this as someone who I have played Fallout 3, 4, New Vegas, and Morrowind, Skyrim. What? I feel like I've played one more.
Oblivion.
I've played Oblivion, Morrowind, and Skyrim. Morrowind by far the most, but I haven't put the like thousands of hours that I know other people have. But I still have, I have a good feeling that Starfield is gonna, it's gonna hit its mark. I don't think they make something of this scale. I don't think they make a new IP for the first time in nearly 30 years, unless they're really sure they can pull it off and like hit their expectations. You know, say what you want about game development, but Todd Howard is pretty damn good at what he does, and he has a very, very high standard that he wants to hit. So yeah. My hope is high.
Well, this is the game. I'm sure we'll have somebody from the dev team, maybe even Todd himself, on the pod when we hit September time. It's exciting. I'm very excited for it. I hope it lives up to its expectations, because I've never seen a game like this in modern gaming. Granted, when the stakes were much lower, when a lot of the publishers and the developers were much smaller 20 plus years ago, you know, like think about maybe not even 20 years ago, early aughts, maybe you can say like some of the Call of Duties and other things were very monumental for companies like Activision. However, it is in 2023 and in the past decade or so, this is Xbox's big comeback. That's the other like context I just want to add here before we move on to the next topic. It's like Xbox was huge during the 360 generation, and then they lost their footing. The Xbox One generation was a shit show, and they've talked about that themselves as well. So it's not just me speaking, you know, slandering them. They know this. And this is the comeback. And Microsoft now, this is the other part, really briefly, you know, they announced like 20 games that are going to be day one playable on Game Pass. We've said this before. I've said this before in newsletters. They view themselves now as a software company. Xbox is a software gaming publisher, not necessarily a hardware company. Yes, they still make consoles, but they care way more about you playing any of their games on any platform, which is why they're bringing stuff to Switch. It's why they're bringing stuff to cloud gaming, right? They just want to have as many users as possible across platform. And that's the key here. This is the biggest piece of software they've published probably ever in the case of Microsoft. And so it's going to be a huge, huge deal.
Just on a very related note, if anyone from Microsoft is listening, when you do a showcase, you don't need to tell us every time something is available day one on Game Pass, and you can bundle all of those videos all in once. And at the end of all of that, say everything you've seen here is available day one. You're going to get a bigger, massive explosion of applause when you do it all at once. Just a side thing that I definitely complained about during the broadcast. I was like, okay, we get it. It's available day one. All right, okay, again, we get it. Day one. Oh, another one? Day one. Cool. Great. So
yeah.
Just a side for anyone in Microsoft that's listening. Bundle it up.
Game Pass good really, value though. I do like Game Pass.
As someone who has never owned an Xbox, Game Pass is, in my opinion, the best value you can get in gaming. Like, hands down. The library on there is enormous. And the fact that you can get all of it, and it's not all just Xbox games, it's tons of publishers. Like, you can play Persona 5 on there.
It's pretty cool.
Like, yeah, Game Pass is incredible. Gotta build the hype in a way that really concentrates it. gotta really have it be punchy all at the end. So that's just my little PSA to anyone and anyone from Microsoft.
We'll dive into the last topic, which is, I don't even know where to start. Like, I'm simultaneously, I am the disappointed but not surprised meme, which is the Nick Merck saga over the past week and some change. To catch you up, if you haven't seen it, and to tell you a little bit, Nick Merck is this very, very popular live streamer, very well known for primarily Call of Duty nowadays, but also Fortnite. And Nick had an instance on Twitter last week, which has become a mainstream debate around gaming in the worst possible way. Yep. So responding to Puckett, the esports commentator and host, who Puckett's a genuinely a good person, so I don't want, he's not to play or blame for any of this. Puckett shared with obviously sorrow and disdain for what was going on, a video of LGBTQ demonstrators being attacked. And Nick Merckx responded to this that they should leave the children alone. If you're not familiar, I'll explain this for people who maybe aren't as up. It is very common and unfortunately very fucking sad that one of the attacks on gay, queer, lesbian, and trans people is that they are groomers, that they groom children. And this is extremely frequent in right-wing politics and extremely pervasive. I have heard this said and corrected. People at random like get-togethers and parties, I saw somebody say it on like my sister-in-law's Facebook page the other day, and like I got super frustrated about it. And I'm just like, this is extremely pervasive. And he said this in the middle of Pride. And I think there's something to be said about, if it wasn't Pride Month, Activision Blizzard probably would have let it slide. But he did it at the time we're supposed to be celebrating and welcoming our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. Like, that, we're supposed to be celebrating these people. This is the one month that they're the center focus, and we're supposed to be extremely welcoming and sharing their stories. It is a sly ass comment about them, like, again, he didn't say it outright, but it was sort of a well-known right-wing dog whistle to say they're groomers is insanely disappointing. And what's happened since then, kind of two things, and this is why we want to touch on this. One, Activision responded by removing his operator from the game. He, for those unfamiliar, basically had a skin representing him that he helped design in the most recent Call of Duty game. And they removed it. And as a result of them removing it, Tim the Tatman, another streamer who's good friends with Nick, asked them to remove his, and they did. And this has started a huge, huge shitstorm on social media, led predominantly by right-wing commentators around quote-unquote canceling and, you know, and boycotting Activision and boycotting Call of Duty, etc. And very similar to what happened when Bud Light did a promotion recently with Dylan Mulvaney a little bit ago as well. And the entire discussion has made gaming much more mainstream, but this is being covered by very well-known right-wing political commentators in the most negative way possible. And I do just want to say, before we dive into it, because Prime, I want you to react.
Oh, yeah.
Activision is not a quote-unquote woke company.
Not even a bit.
Shut the hell up. They aren't.
They're just not.
Bobby Kotick, I reported last summer on his political donations. Guess who he donates the most to? Republicans. Yeah. He does donate to both Republicans and Dems, but his biggest donation was to Republicans. Yeah. This is not a woke company in Activision by any means at all. They're also the company known right now for being in multiple legal disputes around sexual harassment towards women in the workplace. This is not a quote-unquote woke company at all.
This it was is a profit margin. This it, is just yes. profits.
And it a huge brand risk for Nick Burks for what he said. Yeah. And like I said, I very much believe, I think regardless of when he said it, there should be consequences. But I think if it wasn't said during Pride, and I think Hassan said this, if it wasn't said during Pride, I think Activision would have let it go. But it was said during Pride at a time of celebration of LGBTQ folks. And that's what he had to say. And he's defended himself and said, oh, well, you know, I was just talking about my family values or whatever. Shut the hell up, man.
Yeah, like, I don't care.
You knew, like, it's a dog whistle. It's a very well-known dog whistle.
So, for starters, this dog whistle is not new. It's been around for decades. The idea that the queer community is making your kids gay has been used since the, like, 60s. There are old TV commercials about it. So this is not a new thing. It's just a thing that, because the demonization of other groups has failed so miserably, this is just the new group that like the hyper right wing wants to demonize. And it's fucked. It's really idiotic. But I'm going to say right now, I'm not at all surprised. Nick Merckx is a piece of shit. When TwitchCon announced that they were going to do a mask mandate, because there was a pretty major uptick in COVID at the time. Like, initially, I don't remember if it was TwitchCon 20, I think it was TwitchCon 22 where he did this. Yeah, there wasn't a mask mandate initially. There was a major uptick in COVID. TwitchCon said, hey, because of this, we want to keep our attendees safe. And he said, fuck you, I'm going to host a no mask party across the street. So yeah, I'm not at all surprised. The dude's an idiot.
Yeah.
It's very straightforward. But yeah, Activision Blizzard is not woke. This is very much just virtue signaling from them, because it's Pride. Taking it down is a, all things considered, positive choice. And it could lead to more people buying it, the LGBT community. But, like, yeah, they're not woke. They're just trying to make bucks. Activision's always been trying to make bucks.
And trying to, like, quell political unrest. If you, like, see their statement about this, it was like, you know, there was internal people who were upset. There are a lot of gay, queer, and trans people that work at Activision as a company. Many of them. And I know that there were pipe-ups that were like, what the fuck, right? Like, when he said this. And that's what they're trying to solve. They already have enough issues on their hands with workers. They don't need another one.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it, and so, yeah, I mean, there was almost nothing to lose by removing it, right? Like, sure, you get the, like, public discourse of boycott, Call of Duty, yada, yada, yada.
But no one's going to.
No.
This is the thing about gaming, and we bring this up all the goddamn time. Gamers are a group of people who are more than willing to scream about things, but, like, when it comes to actually inconveniencing themselves, they might take a couple days off, but they're not gonna do anything major.
No And the next Call of Duty, it probably won't have the record sales that the most recent one is, but the next Call of Duty will be bought at the same as usual, right? Like, this will have no lasting effect on COD at all.
Yeah, no, it's,
so there was nothing to lose. I just think it makes me sad when gaming becomes such a big part of, like, political discourse, etc., because it's never good. There's never a good time for gaming to be a part of the political discourse. No. The times that it has been part of the political discourse, the mainstream political discourse, like this the past few years, a mass shooting, 2018, not a good one. Both left and right, you know, saying that gaming causes violence. Both sides of the political aisle fucking it up for everybody, right? Like, screw them both. And news networks on both sides, you know, and more recently, issues as well like this, that have been a bigger part of the discourse too. And it's just like, can it just stop? Like, can gaming be a part of, like, mainstream? And it's not. This is not changing until mainstream news moves on from the boomers and the Gen Xers and is taken over by the people that actually play fucking games and have played games the majority of their lives, aka millennials and zoomers. And when those people are the people in power, the discourse will get a lot more healthy I'm sure we'll still have outrage like this from the political right. That's probably not going to change. But I think there will be a little bit more defense other than fucking Hassan Piker on Twitch, right? Like, which is about the only political defense from the left, right? Like, it's just sad. I hate that this, like, continues to be the discourse. And I'm super disappointed in Tim the Tap Man as well. Yeah. I'm disappointed in Tim. I'm disappointed in Ninja because I saw Ninja liking a bunch of these different posts about this thing. Obviously, he's friend in the same friend group. Like, I think all these guys are just relatively, and me saying this, they'll never come on the show. I don't care. Like, I think these guys are stupid. They're just straight up stupid. Nick Merckx too. Just stupid. That's it. Stupid guy. That's it. And like, you know, you're not supporting. Here's the thing, Tim. You're not supporting your friend by letting them say shit unchecked.
Yep.
And like, maybe you agree with him. Maybe that's why you're just like, all right, like, yeah, cool. I hope you don't. That it would suck if you do, Tim. But like, the sad part is that the best friends hold people accountable. I don't like friends in my life personally. They're yes men that basically just like let all of my decisions go unfeathered and unchecked. I like people, friends in my life, that when I say some bullshit, they check me on my bullshit. Especially if the bullshit bars on bigotry.
Yeah.
That definitely should be checked by your friends. Your friends should be the first one to tell you you're full of it. And clearly that's not the case here with Nick Merckx. He is just doubled down. And the friends in his life have told him it's okay. And that's fucking disappointing. Truly, truly disappointing. Because he should be checked by his friends. And he's getting affirmation from the wrong people. The wrong people are giving affirmation to this take. And on the same note, because they've just happened back to back, you know, another coming off of Summer Games Fest, one of the women who was in Fable, in the Fable trailer, a bunch of people are now attacking her, including, again, right-wing commentators, etc., on social media, for not, quote-unquote, being feminine enough. And also, like, trying to signal, even though, you know, Microsoft said nothing about this, trying to signal that she's trans and also being transphobic. And yeah, it's, like, look, I know there will continue to always be some negative discourse around Pride on social media. Social media is so fucking toxic. And Twitter in particular has only gotten worse the past few months because a bunch of the banned assholes are back on the platform. And there's very little content moderation for hateful ideologies. But like, it's so disappointing that back to back, the Nick Merckx stuff and then the Fable stuff have happened. And there's not enough from the opposite side of the aisle, the left, like left side of the aisle, like talking about this and standing up for this. Really important.
I mean, I didn't even realize this until just now. I looked it up. This is a big fuck around to find out, because now Nick Merckx and Tim the Tapman aren't allowed to co-stream the championship. They've been taken off
for COD champs.
They've been taken off the COD champs. So yeah, fuck around to find out. Realistically, like, just let people live their goddamn lives. if you want to figure out who is actually doing all of the, like, the pedophilia and the grooming, tends to not be the gay community or the trans community or the queer community. They're just trying to survive,
be accepted. That's it. It's a really low bar.
Yeah, you know?
That's it. Just acceptance. Able to participate in daily society without hate. That's it. It is a very low fucking bar. And it's beyond disappointing to me. Also, Nick Merckx, by the way, on that note, Nick Merckx was being paid to host that watch party. So he's losing another source of income for being an asshole. So there you go.
Fuck around and find out.
I'm sure it would have given COD Champs a bunch of publicity and visibility, but nonetheless, I don't know. I feel very conflicted about this as someone who's critically covered Activision and a lot of their workers' rights issues and the treatment of women, the mistreatment of women within that company, et cetera. It's very hard to be like, all right, well, like, yes, they did this, but this is like the easiest layup of all time to basically remove him from everything they do. Because, again, there's very little to lose.
Nothing to lose.
So, yeah. Well, that's going to be it for us here on the show. Thank you all for listening for the past hour. We hope you enjoyed. We will be back next week. We are going to have a big discussion about Reddit. If you've not seen the Reddit news, I would say before you listen to the next episode, maybe read up a little bit on this. But we'll have a big episode next week on Reddit. What's going on with Reddit? It is chaos. It's crazy to see one of the most center points of the internet being kind of, yeah, mishandled in this way, I think is probably the appropriate way to say it. Like, yep. What's happening by Reddit executives is nuts. But that will be next week for us. For this week, though, Prime, thank you for joining me as always. And that's going to be it for us for Visionaries. Thank you for listening to this episode. Special thanks to Prime here for helping with this episode, Sammy Daig and Cecilia Chiocetti. We will be back next week with more episodes of Visionaries. And while you are here, please listen and rate and review the past podcast and this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts in particular, super helpful to us. Thank you very much for being here with us. We will see you next week.